Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Tuesday, August 5th. I'm Belle Lin for The Wall Street Journal. You've got your computer passcodes, your banking details, passport and other IDs, your insurance information. But if it's all stored in different places, there's a better way. We'll tell you how to keep your documents accessible and safe. Then, beware the chatbot that flatters. The idea of AI sycophancy is raising alarm bells among researchers. We'll explain why. But first, digital secrets like tax numbers, passwords, blood type, and medications need a place to live. You might not have thought of a digital lockbox or a password manager as the best place to store them. But our personal tech columnist, Nicole Nguyen, says it just might be, and she joins us now to make the case. Nicole, what makes a password manager ideal for storing these digital secrets?
I have been putting non-logins in my password manager for years now, and every time I have to fill out a form online, I am like, I'm so glad that I invested the time to do this. A password manager is very secure. Not all password managers are created equally, but zero-knowledge encryption password managers, so I'm talking like 1Password, Dashlane, Apple's built-in password manager tool, Bitwarden, these password managers encrypt your vault and everything contained within, and only your master password can decrypt that vault. And your master password is unknown to the company, so no employee or hacker could get to it and get to your passwords.
So are also those the same reasons why it's considered safe to store our most sensitive data in a single place rather than maybe spread out across multiple places like you describe?
Yes, exactly. It's hands down the most secure way to store all of this data. And two, it's just super convenient to do so. Autofill is a feature that a lot of people are familiar with. When you're in your browser and you're shopping, your credit card details like maybe autofilled by your browser or by your password manager. Autofill can work the same way for a lot of these other details too. If you have a browser extension for your password manager, all you have to do is type in TSA PreCheck and one click to copy and paste that number right into the form when you need it.
How do you recommend going about actually choosing a password manager?
So there are a couple things that you should look for when you are trying to pick the right password manager. One is that provider in the business of security? We want to choose a password manager that's going to be in business for a long time. Do they have both a consumer and enterprise product that can bolster its longevity? Two, is it zero knowledge encryption or built on a zero knowledge framework? This is that encryption system that I mentioned previously, where only your master password that's only known to you and not by the company can decrypt your vault. And three, is it available on all of the devices and services that you use? So maybe you have a Mac computer and an iPhone, but you use the Chrome browser, which is owned by Google. The Apple password app that's built in is probably not going to cut it for you. You probably should use Bitwarden or 1Password or another third-party password manager that can work across different products and services, because it's very important that you have a password manager everywhere you live online.
So speaking of living, we are both in the land of the living at the moment, but in your column, you mention it's important to store digital secrets for when we pass. Why is that?
It's morbid and unpleasant to think about, but one day we will move on from this universe. And when that happens, your heirs have the burden of figuring out the passcode to your computer, account details to shut down credit card accounts so that identity thieves don't run a line of credit in your name, for example. And consolidating all of this information ahead of time in your password manager and making sure your master password is discoverable along with your will to your heirs can definitely relieve that burden on them.
That was WSJ personal tech columnist Nicole Nguyen. Coming up, who doesn't like to be flattered? It's great until, well, you might be able to think of some downsides. The problem is especially acute with AI chatbots, where that behavior is baked right in. That's after the break. Have you noticed your chatbot taking on an overly agreeable and gracious tone? You're not alone. Malihe Alekhani, an assistant professor of AI at Northeastern University's Quarry College of Computer Sciences, has been studying the phenomenon of AI sycophancy. She spoke with our Julia Carpenter about the problem and how we can counter it.
Malihe, this fawning, flattering tone is definitely something I've observed in certain AI tools. Can you first outline for us exactly what AI sycophancy is per your research definition?
We define AI sycophancy as the tendency of large language models to overagree with users and display flattering behaviors, especially when users sound confident or present incorrect information. It might seem like the AI is just being polite or easy to talk to, but our research shows that this can lead to real harm. Instead of challenging us or asking clarifying questions, the AI just ends up reinforcing our biases. Imagine a doctor describing a patient's symptoms and the AI just confirms the diagnosis without exploring alternatives, or a lawyer inputting potentially incorrect facts or biased facts and the AI just ends up reinforcing those in the decision-making process. Because AI sounds smart, we often trust it without questioning it. We often engage with it without expressing our own uncertainties, which we tend to do when we interact with each other.
And have we seen this before, maybe in tech of the past or other tech of the present?
We've seen similar dynamics before. If you think about recommendation systems or just the social media platforms that we use, like Instagram or Facebook, these apps and platforms often optimize for engagement by feeding us content we already agree with. The difference now is that generative AI presents itself as an intelligent collaborator and not just as a platform or an app we're using, right? So it feels like we are dealing with a very smart, coherent AI agent, but it is most of the times really echoing what we're telling it.
What could happen if we come to rely too much on these chatbots and become too used to their sycophancy?
We aim to build AI systems that can serve as collaborators, as tools that can help us make better decisions in different contexts, you know. But if we are relying too much, especially on the sycophantic behavior, right, it's going to end up reinforcing our biases. We're not going to be able to use our judgment properly over time, right? We will lose the sense of curiosity and how we argue things, how we reject and push back and learn. The process of collaborative decision-making or achieving a common ground is such a rich and beautiful process in human-human conversation. And relying on these sycophantic tools is just going to make us biased agents.
Malihe, how do we find the line between something being polite and inoffensive and something being sycophantic and flattering? And then how do we also distinguish whether that is helpful to us or not as we try to get information?
It's such a subtle distinction. Sometimes it might be just by saying, oh, I think you're right. It's this flattering tone that is constantly reinforcing our own biases instead of grounding the answers in facts. But it's also the overall behavior of not wanting to negotiate with you on anything at all. And so if you think about it in human-human conversation, we create natural pauses where we pause and digest information and ask information-seeking questions, ask clarification questions. There are negotiations and pushbacks. We offer different facts. All of these, what we call in our research, positive friction, quote unquote, right, that exists in human-human conversation. It seems that it's really hard for us to bring this in a human-like manner into the trainings of these systems. These systems, one of the reasons why they show the sycophantic behavior is that they have a feedback mechanism, that the more positive feedback is from the user, the better that data point is ranked. And so the system keeps reinforcing that, right? So when the system says, oh, that sounds great, or, oh, I think that this is right that you believe this, right? And so the user user is going to show thumbs up. And that is positive feedback for the system.
As we integrate things like ChatGPT and Gemini more and more into our daily lives and work, is there anything we as users can do to counter this AI sycophancy?
Some of the strategies that we have found in our research has been very helpful in working with different types of generative AI systems has been trying to communicate our own uncertainty, the user uncertainty. Another point is pushing AI to express its uncertainty. Like, how confident are you? Or can you show me where it was mentioned? Is this a fact, right, or not? Another thing is creating these moments of positive friction into this human AI dialogue, whether it's an intentional pause, or it is by asking several different questions from AI to understand where it's coming from, or is it making up a fact, you know?
That was Mollyhei Alakhani, an assistant professor of AI at Northeastern University's Quarry College of Computer Sciences. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with deputy editor Chris Sinsley and help from Melanie Roy and Charlotte Gartenberg. Logging off, I'm Bao Lin for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back later this morning with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.